Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there, it's Jill Schlesinger. I'm launching a new show. It's called Money Moves, and your money is going to move. We're going to help you make better financial decisions. We're going to call out the BS you're finding all over social media. We're going to give you actionable guidance to make your financial life clearer, less stressful. We're going to answer your financial questions and take the mystery out of your financial life. Follow and listen to Money Moves with Jill Schlesinger wherever you get your podcasts.
Always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this?
You combine the reporting from The Athletic. That I can echo if that matters to any of you guys. But Luka has made it very clear, abundantly clear over the course of the season, that if he's a Laker, he wants Austin to be a Laker. They have become friends. They enjoy playing together. They enjoy needling each other when given the opportunity to do so. That has been a relationship that has really kind of grown over the course of the season. So when a superstar wants a player around, you know, we just saw with like Maxi Kleber, who is not an NBA player anymore. He remained on the roster. Austin very much is an NBA player. I would be shocked if Austin isn't on the team. Now the number that he comes in at, that obviously is a very different conversation and impacts obviously the Lakers' plans here moving forward. But Luka wanting him back, Rob getting to celebrate one of his biggest wins as a decision maker for the Lakers, Austin getting to continue to be maybe the best example of development in the Lakers organization as well. I just say, and then on top of it, I actually think, you know, over the course of the series against OKC, Austin kept getting better. I thought he did a much better job staying under control as that series went along. Had it extended, I think that trend would have continued. And I look forward to seeing what that looks like next year. How, all that said, if Austin is on the team next year, and if it is Luka and Austin as your backcourt of the future, both those guys need to be quite a bit better shooting the basketball than they were this year. That is the starting place here. The defense, I know the defense kind of goes without saying, I'll say it anyway, but the defense does obviously need to improve. The personnel defensively around them needs to improve. And their focus defensively needs to improve, Luka specifically. But as far as like what you need to be great at, if that is your backcourt, you need to be overwhelming offensively, and you cannot be overwhelming offensively if there are questions about either and or both of those guys as perimeter or three-point shooters.
And JJ, that 16-2 stretch that you guys had from late February through the end of March, and we're juggling the three quarterbacks, I guess, as Rob said, it was clearly able to work. How do you feel about that core getting a chance to coach that again?
I mean, I'll repeat what Rob said. Of course, we'd want that core to be back together. And I think Rob used the word humility, and each guy, I think, had to sacrifice at different points in the season and at different times. I also think for all three of those guys, and it's crazy to say that about LeBron too, but all three of those guys showed a lot of growth this year. And I think, you know, a lot has been made about Luka's fitness level and his dedication to that, and he was great throughout the season. He's still in fantastic shape 6 weeks after an injury. But he's also grown as a leader. Like, I think that was one of the challenges coming into the season that we presented him with. He grew in that regard. Austin grew in that regard. LeBron, you know, having to not even having to, but being challenged to, and then volunteering to accept a different role in year 23. Like, that is incredible growth. So, you know, all three of those guys, I think we kind of hit the apex of that in that 16-2 stretch, and it showed what this group can do.
Good morning, guys. Rob, I feel like I could ask you about 8 different free agents on your roster, but instead of doing that, I want to ask you about the infrastructure and the ability to kind of reshape the front office this summer. What is the Lakers front office going to look like next year? Where are you guys at in that process? And I guess, what are some of the, we know you hired Tony Bennett. What are some of the other kind of things that we can expect to see?
Yeah, great question, Dan. First, I think JJ and I are just so grateful to work under Jeannie's leadership and Mark Walter, and just the energy he's brought to us to kind of build this out. We have already started that reconstruction and have made hires in our front office and continued to develop new technologies and new areas that we've turned on for the draft, for free agency. So a lot of the infrastructure is being built. I'll be headed to the combine. We will continue to staff out with assistant general manager positions. There's a couple of those that we're currently interviewing for and have done an extensive dive in that process. So
as far as the assistant GMs go, I was texting with Pete and with Jovan while this was going on. And what I had kind of figured why they would do 2 assistant GMs was basically my guess at the time, somewhat informed, but my guess at the time, it was that you would have one kind of draft oriented assistant GM, and you would have one kind of pro personnel, you know, NBA expert type of assistant GM. Obviously, we'll get a fuller explanation from Rob specifically on this here in a moment. It's going to be really interesting to see how the Lakers go about hiring or filling this position, where like there are kind of 2 paths that you could take. You could either elevate people who are in, you know, whatever position that they currently hold, and then backfill those positions with, you know, people with a little bit less experience and kind of keep everything in house. That is how the Lakers kind of historically do things. Or, and this is what I'm hoping, or you go out there into that big old world where the world is your oyster, and you go to OKC, or you go to San Antonio, or you go to Detroit, or you go to, like, you know, Boston and some of these other organizations that have had the kind of sustained success that Rob Pelinka talked about earlier. And I'm really interested. I haven't gotten around to asking, hey, what is their approach going to be here? But between those 2 paths, I think the latter is the significantly more appealing one to me. You know, go out, rummage through those organizations that are running at the level that you eventually want to arrive at, and poach those people, make those organizations weaker, make your organization stronger. And also, like, from a networking standpoint, one of the things that, you know, we always hear about the Lakers tax this, Lakers tax that. No team wants to trade with Rob Pelinka. No team wants to trade with the Lakers. No team wants to help the Lakers, blah, 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 blah. But I think part of what goes into that situation, not saying that it's false or that it doesn't exist, But part of what kind of goes into that situation is the fact that like the Lakers are the most insulated organization in the sport. And there is kind of only a handful of teams that they regularly make deals with. Rob Pelinka is not known as somebody who is particularly easy to negotiate with. And it isn't a what many would call a fun experience negotiating against Rob Pelinka. And then also from a trust standpoint around the league, you have teams like the Kings who feel like Rob backed out of a trade after having already agreed to it. And you know, you have the Hornets who feel kind of the same way. Bringing in some new people from around the league allows the Lakers to expand their network a little bit. And there are more friendships there, which, you know, lends the Lakers a little bit better benefit of the doubt. And they can, you know, kind of take advantage of some of those friendships, those relationships, and get some more things done on the trade market.
Those will be two key pillars that we'll add this offseason. And then working with Lon Rosen, who now is our president of business, as you guys saw, our G League team is relocating to a brand new, beautiful 10,000 seat arena in Coachella Valley. So what that does in our building is it opens up all of this space, and we have actually a space in the back where, working in collaboration with some of the Dodgers folks, we're bringing in a biomechanics lab, new movement labs, a recovery lab. Those things are super expensive to do and super thoughtful, but we're doing the planning with Lon and his team around that, and that construction is going to happen this off season. They're going to be redoing aspects of the court as well. So it's a full rebuild and retool, and it's adding to the great things that are already here, which have led to success, but elevating it and bringing it to the next level. So ongoing process that will be doing throughout the off season, probably hopefully culminating in and around the summer league in Vegas.
My second question for you, Rob. JJ, you're off the hook. You guys have stuff that you haven't had access to this summer in terms of cap space, in terms of multiple draft picks that you can maneuver with. How do you feel about the level of optionality? I know it's one of your favorite words, that you guys have this summer to get better. And do you see pathways potentially that if you do return Austin and LeBron, that you guys can still mold the roster in sort of the ways that best fit Luka?
Yeah, I think that is a really good and the right word to use is optionality in this sort of double apron CBA. It's almost an effective hard cap. I think having the optionality to roster plan and roster build, there's several ways to do it. There's in the draft. There's through trades, where some teams are going to be trying to get off good players in this harsh system. And then there's through free agency. And we do, to your point, have the optionality to look at all those different avenues to get better. And the archetype of the roster that we want is going to be retrofitted around Luka and the things he needs. And clearly he's that leader and player for the future that we want to build the right way around.
So as far as the optionality thing goes, it's really interesting here because the way that Rob has talked about optionality in the past, and look at this dude, what do the kids call it? Face maxing or mogging or whatever it's called. Look at this, one eyebrow up. So the way that optionality has been talked about in the past has been something that the Lakers are kind of working towards, right? It's been this thing, you know, that they're working towards optionality. Optionality is a goal rather than right now it's an asset. And I think that distinction is really important here because if optionality is your goal, that means you can't have contracts that extend beyond X or Y year. That means you're using your draft picks to give you more options rather than looking at them as something that you could use and develop. It becomes, you know, all of your young players, as soon as they show anything in a world of optionality, with that being kind of the goal, when those young players start looking good, they become trade assets, not necessarily additives to an organizational core. And I'm not saying that this is definitely how the Lakers are looking at this now, or this is definitely how Rob Pelinka is looking at this now, but if optionality goes from or moves from being a goal to now being an asset, that's how you have, you know, and this is what it sounds like is the framing here, where he's talking about, well, we can, you know, the optionality that we have right now, we can improve the team via trade. We can improve the team via free agency. We can improve the team internally. And we have the options there to do so, rather than in years past when Rob would be presented a question like this, he would be talking about how we have to maintain those avenues for ourselves, or even more importantly, open up those avenues for ourselves by way of some of the decisions that we're making here moving forward. So I'm not saying definitively that this is the end of optionality as we have kind of known it over the last 3-4 years. I am probably saying that it has to be that if the Lakers are going to be the kind of title contender that we want them to be next year. But as far as, you know, the distinction between how Rob is talking about it now versus the last few years, I think is really important to note. And in his own kind of, you know, very Rob Pelinka way here, you know, he's addressing the fact that, all right, it is time to put this optionality, you know, to the test, or take advantage of the optionality that we have opened up for ourselves with that process that, you know, dates back years, as I kind of talked about earlier in the episode.
JJ and Rob, when you look at Oklahoma City, how young and dynamic they are, how daunting of a task is it to build a team to compete with that?
Yeah, I think, listen, if you look around the playoffs right now, Brad, I think depth is really important, athleticism and youth, and I think we have a lot of components of that on our roster, but we need to add to it. And I think those are some of the key North Stars that we need to look at. One of the players that they had last night that played really well, AJ Mitchell, they got in the second round, right? So there's ways to add to your roster if you commit to doing the hard work and commit to the process of adding the right pieces. And to the point I made with Dan, we'll be doing that through the draft, through free agency, through trades. And we've got to find a way to have a roster that can compete with any team in the NBA. That's what we do here.
JJ, just for you, often heard about coaches talking about their downtime, reading books, going to seminars, talking to other coaches. Is there anything that you would do or have done this summer just to decompress and then look at reading something that might help you and your staff become better at what you do?
Yeah, we had a little bit of a book club last summer. I'm sure I'll over the next few days I'll come up with my reading list. My performance coach actually just wrote a book. It came out and sent me a copy, so I'm on page 3. We'll figure out some time to do that. Honestly, the thing I'm looking for, and I'm not trying to be funny here, the thing I'm looking forward to the most is going to bed at 9:30 p.m. and just getting sleep and recalibrating my sleep cycle. That's what I'm looking forward to over the next week or so.
Good morning, Rob and JJ. I'll start with you, Rob. What is that communication process with Luka, knowing that he's kind of the North Star of this franchise right now? And has he communicated to the front office what he would like the team to look like going into next season?
Yeah, I think the key word is that's an ongoing collaborative process. It's not, hey, I want X, Y, and Z. So we're in constant communication with him and his team. I plan on seeing him before he takes off to go home and spend some time with his daughters. We're going to get together, I think, on Friday or Saturday. So ongoing dialogue. He's an incredible partner. His basketball IQ on the court is something we get to see, I think, as fans. JJ and I get to see his basketball knowledge in terms of other players in the league and the way he wants to play and who he wants to play with. His knowledge base is vast, and so those dives and collaborations with him are actually really inspirational. And he also does it in a way where he wants to do his job great, and he wants to let JJ do his job great and let me do my job great. So they really are productive conversations through that lens.
JJ, BT just asked a similar question to Rob, but I'm curious for you as a coach, when you see the depth that Oklahoma City was able to bring to that series, how would you like to see a roster constructed? Do you want, you know, you kind of stuck to 8-9-man rotations for a lot of the year. Do you want to be able to extend into a 10th, 11th man where you're comfortable, where, like OKC was able to do?
It's a great question. I think, first of all, I repeat what I said last night. I'm just grateful for all the guys that were on this year's team and the work that they put in, their commitment to trying to win.
It's a good question. Don't get me wrong. I think it was the new guy who's on the beat who asked it. Ben, I think his name is. It's also kind of a tough question. He's like, JJ, sorry, man. But eventually, over the course of the series, you lost faith in Jake LaRavia, and Jared Vanderbilt's finger popped out of his hand, and you were still more willing to play him down the stretch of that series instead of Jake LaRavia. Eventually, you benched DeAndre Ayton, and you know, we've seen this now for two playoffs where you just continue to cut the rotation down. Would you like more good players? Like, what's JJ? Like, he handles it well here, where he's like, you know, first and foremost, I'm really grateful for all of the guys and the season that we had. I'm proud of all the guys. They improved. But also, yes, I need more basketball players. I need better basketball players. I would like to be able to compete against that team that blew us out of 3 out of 4 games.
This year, I don't necessarily view depth as a rotation thing, though. Whether you play 8, 9, whether you play 11, 12, you need to have depth, and that depth typically comes in sort of the roster spots 10 through 15, and whether that's internal development, draft, trade, free agency, whatever it is, we need to build depth beyond rotation, because you're naturally going to have injuries. You know, there were, you sit there and you plan all summer for how your team's supposed to play and how your team's supposed to look. And I maybe 5 games out of the 90, what did we play, 92 games? Maybe 5 games out of the 92 games, you know, it was something that I had planned over the offseason. You know, a lot of times you're in a timeout and you're like looking and you're like, I never expected this lineup to be together, you know? So it really is about just building that depth, you know. We can figure out as coaches, we can figure out what a rotation looks like. But you look at OKC's roster, you look at San Antonio's roster, you know, those guys, they have 13 high level rotation players minimum. And that's a luxury to have in the NBA. And it's one of the reasons those teams are really good.
Morning, guys. Rob, you talked about at the trade deadline.
I will also say, like, I know we look at this from a perspective of like, hey, Rob, go get better players. But I think this is also kind of a blind spot for JJ, where he doesn't necessarily trust younger players. Robert Horry talked about after game four, after the Lakers have been swept, how he thought that Adu Thiro should have gotten more playing time over the course of that series or over the course of the season, so that JJ would be more comfortable playing him in that spot. And I agree with the premise. I just think the example is a tough one there, because every time Thiro played over the course of the year, he would miss like the next couple of weeks for the most part. And that just makes it really difficult to really trust a young player like that. But, you know, that said, like there were moments where Drew Timmy, like out of nowhere, would just like stop playing after playing well. You would have, you know, the Lakers signed Kobe Bufkin and he basically never played after they signed him. And they signed Nick Smith Jr. and then he never played in the playoffs basically in any minutes that really mattered. And Bronny was in and out of the rotation, and Dalton was basically never in the rotation. So like one of the things that, you know, JJ Redick is really going to have to improve on as a coach here moving forward, if the Lakers do want to extend their depth and become a deeper team, is he's going to have to show more of a willingness and more patience with younger players, maybe even starting with the guy that they draft at 25 this year.
Wanted obviously to be able to see Luka, Austin, and LeBron together. At that time, you hadn't gotten to see a lot. Now that the entire season's played out, you had that March that was really successful. Like, what was your kind of takeaway from those trio, that trio together, and what does that kind of inform you about the way this roster could be built in the future?
Yeah, at the trade deadline, you know, obviously we added Luke Kennard. We think the spacing that he brought, you know, Rui come on and providing, you know, incredible shooting down the stretch and in the playoffs really opened up sort of the way we wanted to play and JJ wanted to coach by adding shooting to the lineup. And I think that March stretch, to your point, was a powerful and strong data point, proof of concept to go 16-2 to play as good as any team in the NBA during that stretch. So that window and that period of time will be a part of our deconstruction as we figure out how to retrofit things around our primary pieces.
And JJ, you talked about Luka being a leader. We've talked about it many times this season, but now that you're on the back end, were there ways that Luka emerged as a leader that maybe surprised you, or what, like, what new parts of his leadership showed themselves as the season went on?
I think he made a commitment, you know, very early on, going back to last offseason, with just the off-court relationship development, part of being a leader and part of getting people to play hard with you and play alongside you is developing relationships. And he was very committed this year and to developing those relationships both on and off the court. I think him being more vocal in game, in film sessions, whatever it looked like.
I'm sorry. I know I'm annoying about this, but can we also just address the elephant in the room in that Luka became a lot easier to play with and a lot easier to get along with after he picked up his 15th technical and could not pick up any more tees anymore?